Hi, everyone. Welcome to ADAS Prevention 365, where prevention is every day in every way. I am one of your hosts, Tiffany Tan, coming back at you with another episode of mine, which is really close to home. I am Cambodian American, born and raised by refugees. And this holds a really special episode for me because I will be interviewing my very own mom. Hi, Ma.
Hey.
Ma, thank you so much for being brave and being willing and let alone maybe excited to be part of this episode.
You're welcome. I'm appreciate.
Thank you, Ma. But I wanted to bring up this conversation that is emotionally heavy. As a daughter of refugees, I hear stories every day growing up from my mom, my aunts. They can only speak about maybe a couple words when I was younger before I realized that it was just so heavy and honestly really painful for them to talk about. This includes how they were born in Sukhmai, which is Cambodia, but her life and how many Khmer's life turned upside down when Pol Pot came into power. And so, Matt, I bring this over to you. How was your childhood like in Sokhap, Sukhmai?
Hi. In my whole life, I live in Cambodia. I born in Cambodia and raised in Cambodia. I live in a village, countryside. I never have childhood until now. We do not have a wonderful life, but we don't have a bad life. We have just normal life. Our country is very poor. The children need to help the parents as much as they can. Then I help my aunt. Then my aunt make me selling banana fry with my cousin. But they are boys. They are a little bit younger than me, and one is a bit older than me. But my aunt make me to sell banana fry. She put a banana fry on a tray and she make me carry it on top of my head. And we walk barefoot on the dirt. And when it's hot, the sand is so hot, it burn my feet. And we have to walk fast, like jump and hop. So we need to walk faster to avoid the sun. And then somehow, you know, we all children doesn't know how to take care or be careful. We fell, and then the banana fry is covered by sand, and we just wipe it out, blow it out, and then put it to the tray and then go along and sell. And then banana fry sell, one piece is 1 riel in our country is not even half or a piece of penny in America. So that is very, very, very poor. 1975 through 1979, we come to a Pol Pot regime. Everybody in the city, in the capital, in the village, evacuate
to
the jungle. Mm-hmm. Yes, and million of people die because of starving, not enough food, no medicine, no school, no education. And then they make the people build the house like hearse house, small house from the branch of tree, and some sleep on the ground. They make you work hard. They separate the child from the parent, start from the age of 5 years old, and they separate the gender.
Yeah, gender.
The boy live with the boy, the girl will live with a girl, and the teen, they live separate. Also, some husband and wife, they separated too. The wife is live in a place, work in a different place. The husband live and work different place, and starving, no food.
Yeah. So, Matt, just so the viewers understand, when you say work, this is they were forced to work. This is forced labor.
Forced labor.
Yeah, forced labor. So you're separated from your mom.
Yes.
You're separated from your sisters.
Correct.
You're the youngest of seven.
Correct.
And you're separated from even anyone you know. Matt, do you remember how old you were when this just changed your life and everyone's life in Soklay in Cambodia?
By the time I think I am 11 or 11 and a half, just say 11.
Mm-hmm, 11. So you were still a child, Matt.
Yes, it is.
You were still a child and...
Still a child. Mm-hmm.
You still needed your mom and your dad.
Yes, of course. We need parents to be cuddled, to be warm, to mm-hmm. be care.
To be safe.
Safe, yeah. Yeah.
And then, so Matt, can you tell me about what were you forced to work at 11? So you're separated with other 11-year-olds, other 11-year-old girls. What did they make you do?
They made me do the brick. And the brick to cover the roof. And then after that, they moved me from that place to make me carry the ground, you know, digging ground, carry it out to make a deep canal. And after that, they make me carry the water to water plant, the vegetable, different kind of vegetable. And after that, they make me carry crop. That means to collect it to put in a pie after they harvest. Mm. And after that, they make me work pulling the wheat out of the crop to make the crop grow better. Mm-hmm. And they make me cut all the grass to chop it, or some kind of grass, I don't know what it is, to chop it to make soil. Mm-hmm. And different thing. And then sometime I don't have place to sleep. I sleep underground. When I sleep under the underground, the sand stuck on my lip, my eyebrow. Mm-hmm. Yes. And so
Matt, like when you say you had to fetch water, you had to make bricks with cement to make a brick wall, to make a brick hut. This is labor. This is backbreaking hard work as 11-year-old.
Of course. Yes, yeah. It is.
And they made you, they forced you. Because what would happen if you didn't want to do it? What was your option?
If I cannot do what they want me to do, they will beat you, or they will do more than beat. I don't know what they do, but the most I know, they beat you like they don't care.
Mm-hmm. They don't care because they just needed your labor.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is, we're talking sunrise to sundown.
Yes, sometimes from 7, sometimes it's from 5 or 6. We have to walk from the camp to the working place.
I feel like this is kind of silly to ask, but how was school? Did you have education during this?
No education, no at all. No just education. Work. No, not at all.
Just work.
Just
back-breaking work.
Just work, yeah. Working, yes. No education.
Yeah.
I understand no education, fine, but as long as they make us work, they have to feed us in a food, mm-hmm. but they don't do so. The labor work and the work is earned a lot, but I don't know where the
food went.
The food went, where the job that we done, and then they don't know. I don't know where they collect it to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In our country is a good place to plant rice or whatever that they make us do. Earn a lot, but yeah. They just put in a trailer. I don't know where they ship it to.
Yeah,
you have no question to ask. Yeah. You have no wonder, nothing.
You can ask them where did the food go.
No, you can't do so. You cannot ask. If you ask, they gonna bring you away, and then you gonna gone. We don't know mm-hmm. what they do with it. They gonna kill you with it.
And
no
so,
question.
Right, and so this is forced labor. You're a child.
Correct.
At 11, you're still a child at that age, and you're forced to work agricultural back-breaking work. You're hungry. You told me that they didn't feed you enough. What did they feed you though?
They have one cafeteria for the child. They have a cafeteria for the teen. They have a husband and wife. They have a cafeteria. They made a food, but the food when they after cooking, they have to give you, like, example, a scoop. Mm-hmm. Everybody a scoop. And then sometimes they have like a soup, one big fish or a couple medium fish, and they make to soup. Sometimes they have vegetable like banana, like green banana, some leaf that they could eat. They just put into a water and then they give you that, but not enough.
Not
small
enough.
small yeah. Like little bit scoop, small scoop. Yeah.
And
you still hungry at night, like your stomach is like growling.
Starvation was everywhere. Not to say only starvation, but there was no medicine. There was no way of feeding yourself after working a days in and days out of work in agricultural labor. But how much was the rice portion?
One can of rice, the can as big as the condensed milk. That container they used to scoop the rice. Once one can of rice make two soup of a water soup, and they split it to 15, depend on some day. Some is 15, some 10, some 20. It's just very light rice spot, only water.
So you had more water than like rice grains, because when they sectioned for about 10 people.
Yeah.
It was not even a soup can. It was a small condensed milk can
of
they
rice.
Used that, filled it with water, boiled it, created some type of porridge, so to speak, or if anything, soupy water.
Correct.
And that's what you would eat after you work in the rice fields.
Correct.
When you know, what you said, making tunnels, making brick walls.
Right.
That's what you ate.
Correct.
That's all you could eat. What happened if you asked for more?
No chance to ask for more. No chance at all.
So every day you were hungry, ma?
Every day hungry. Every day stomach is crowding.
My mom says that if once you had your small portion of soupy water and rice, you can kind of salvage to find leaves. So the leaves from the vine, that would kind of suffice, but you would still be going a bit hungry.
Of course.
Every day. And every then the day, next day, you're expected to work again.
Correct.
With full energy, with no questions asked.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then you starving, you tired, you not walk straight, you just kind of wobbling.
Yeah, you starve, you're malnourished.
Yeah. Like you small and small and young and not enough food and you don't have any energy, you're tired, you walk wobbling, and then they hit you, slap you.
Mm-hmm.
They said you is just like not strong.
Oh, so because you don't have enough food in your body or energy to fuel your body, you're maybe confused, you're loopy, you cannot walk straight.
Sloppy.
And right. You're exhausted. And so the leaders, is that
the leader? The leader, and then the leader, the group leader.
Yeah, the group leader would
hit you.
To kind of shame you out and accuse that you're lazy. But really, my mom, everyone in the work camps, they were malnourished. They were starved. They were worked to death.
Some is very, very, very exhausted, die in the place of work.
They just dropped. They dropped it.
Die.
They retired.
Yeah. Die.
Yeah.
You just fell down and die during working time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, Ma, it blows my mind that this happened to you when you were at 11 years old to 15 years old, right, Ma?
Correct.
During this time where death was everywhere, you were forced to work. Did you have some sense of kind of a funny memory, or because you were still a child?
I don't have any memory, but one day I work, and then somehow we end up early, sun still light, and then I walk to some place, and I didn't mention that I meet someone, but I meet my cousin. My third cousin, he is the same age, but I'm born earlier, like a week or 2 weeks before him. So somehow we meeting, we happy, say, oh, wow, I'm so happy to see you. And then how you doing? He say, I'm doing good, but I'm hungry. And I say, I'm hungry too, not only you. What should we find to eat? And then we walk under the tree, the big tree. Then that tree called Dong Cao. The tree is a fruit, is round. Before it green, after that it like brown, and then when it ripe is red. And then I don't have energy, or we not tall enough to reach. We only see the fruit is come down after the bird is eating, and the bird is eat inside already, only the shells outside. And we saw it drop down, and then when it's so dirty, the ant and the insects, it go in there, and then we pick it up, we just bang it, the insects or the ant out, the dust it off, mm-hmm. and then we blow, we bite out by our shirt, and we eating. together, and then he find one, he eat, I find one, I eat, and then we, after we eating, we still hungry, but we anyway, we have something to eat.
Something to eat, that's more like something to like nibble on.
Of course.
Like just a small snack that doesn't even suffice your hunger.
Yeah, just find thing, at least you have something to eat.
Right, but this is like after a bird ate it. This is after the bird ate, the insect ate.
After the bird, after the dirt, after the insects in there, we blow, but we don't care. We say, oh, we happy. We
but it
just
was something.
Eat it. Something, yeah.
And that's how it was with the food scarcity. That's
yeah.
how it was.
After that, we eat, but we have some. And then we're still hungry, but we have at least something. And then after that, I say, oh, we need to go. We cannot be here too long. I need to go. And I say, oh, I cannot go by myself. Can you take me to my camp? And he say, yeah, I walk you.
Oh, because you were separated by gender.
Yes. Right? And then I say, I have to go. I cannot stay here too long. And I say, I cannot go. Can you walk me to my camp? He say, yeah, I walk you. When he walked me to my camp, it's close to my camp. It's not reaching my camp yet, but it's close. And he say, and I say, you go. And he say, oh, I can't go. Can you walk me to my camp? I say, okay, I walk you.
Wait, hold on. So you needed help you asked him for help to walk you to your camp.
Correct.
And then it got, because it was getting too dark.
Yeah.
Or it was getting darker. And then midway or about one third left before you reached the girls' camp, your camp, he needed help to go to his camp.
Of course.
Okay, so then what happened?
And then we keep doing walk each other back and forth a couple times, and the sun is kind of down, and I say, hey, you know what? Now the sun is gonna set. I need to go back to my camp right away before sunset, so I might get in trouble. You get in trouble. And I say, okay, what will you do? You go to your camp by yourself. I go to my camp by myself. From that time, I never see my third cousin anymore. Until 1979, then we come to Battambang after Pol Pot is like breaking.
Overthrown.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. They break out. I don't know. But I don't know what kind of soldier is that. I can't understand that word. I think it's Vietnam or something. They say, okay, now you need to go to the city. Then we come, and then by the time we see each other again, we live the same house together. We live together like a couple months, and then we escape from our country, walk barefoot to Thailand's border.
When you tell me that story, it still holds a sense of childhood innocence.
Correct.
Because you were scared of walking in the night, in the dark.
Correct.
I feel that almost every child had their own experience of darkness and how scary it was.
Correct.
And for you and your, in the reality of the picture of what you were going through, and many young adults, toddlers, elders, parents, they were in a world where there was death everywhere.
Correct.
And mommy, you're going through it at 11-year-olds with the same scared that I was scared of when I was 11-year-old, which is of the dark. And here you are just trying to go back to your camp, because if not, you would get in trouble. And I think what was so profound was you still had the sense of childhood scaredness, but your situation was death in the work camps.
The childhood scaredness is normal to every child, but the scare is if you don't go to the camp by the time that the leader count or call your name, you get in trouble. They say where you go, you are a
disloyal, or you were like secretive,
right? Mm-hmm. Correct.
Or willing to overthrow like the current leader.
Correct.
Right.
Fight them back. And also they accuse you that, and also they will punish you by no eating, no food, and then make you work more, double, triple, whatever.
Right.
Or they beat you up, and because you scare on everything. You're scared of accusing things, you're scared of their beating, they're scared that they're killing you. And because you know, no matter 5 years old, 6 years old, 3 years old, they know Pol Pot is, they kill everybody.
Right.
Because they've been lost their parent of that.
Right. And when we say this genocide, when we talk about this genocide, many Cambodians were killed for being intellectuals, for being medical professionals, for being classical dancers, for coming from a family of high rank. They did not want anyone to hold any intellectual abilities. Pol Pot's regime was based on communism theories, and he wanted a classist society. So education was a sense of threat. So therefore, they just wanted people to work. They just wanted, you know, people, humans, to just work in agricultural. And that's what she was caught in this, like many Cambodians or anyone living in Cambodia during this time, many people did not survive. It's an estimated that 2 million Khmer people died during this time. And that's just an estimate. Ma, who in your family were killed because of Pol Pot? How many?
I have one brother that my dad, my grandparent are an uncle, but especially my third brother, he is young. He's so hungry. You know, everybody is hungry, but he's hungry. He's young, but he doesn't think about how to protect his life. And he hungry. He gets some of the rice that he is working for, and they cut him and they execute, they kill him, they murder him. By the time when my brother got killed, somehow I'm with my mom that time. Someone who is his group of working, one of the guy come up to my mom, and one of the guy come up, he doesn't talk to my mom long. He just say, "Oh, auntie, your son is get killed because of he take right, and then they caught him and they kill him. I know exactly is." And after that, he leave. He not gonna stay long. He not gonna sit down. He just stand close to my mom, talk to her like that. And my mom got shocked. My mom collapsed. My mom passed out. She become purple, and she couldn't breathe. And I shake her. I call, mom, wake up, mom, don't die. If you die, I don't know who I'm gonna live with. Wake up, please. I'm crying. I'm shaking her. I'm squeezing her. I'm massaging her. And I pull her ear, and I blow her ear up to make her wake her up.
And she was so shocked that,
yeah. And then she turned to purple, and like, I don't know how long, couple minutes or whatever. And she wake up, she take a deep breath. From that time, my mom don't talk, just only one word, only a couple words that she need. She no talk to no one. She's very sad. And after that, I don't see my mom anymore. They separate me away again. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
but was the death of your brother and your grandma, your grandpa, and dad also died, were these your first experience of death?
Yeah, that is my first experience of death in my family, because we used to have a warm family. We used to care and respect, love each other of the family, of the sibling, and the parent is so, so warm to the children.
And so just this bloody period of Khmer's history, because of the genocide, because of the forced labor camps, there was starvation, there was no medicine, there was over exhaustion of work, and many people died. But Ma, you had a contrast that there was more people who died by being killed than the combination of starvation, of no medicine, of being overworked. It was the point blank execution that took over so many people's lives.
To me, thinking in my mind, even those starving with not enough food, not medicine, people still have more life. But the more is die because they kill. Mm-hmm. They kill more.
This is execution. This is just a point blank murder.
Right.
Execution.
Correct. So the example, if you don't have a lot of food, you don't have enough food, you don't have a medicine, you don't have a good shelter, people die, but going to be die less. Mm-hmm. the more die because of they kill, they get executed, they get murdered. Mm-hmm. So including the murder and the starving, that's why it's more people die. Yeah.
And that was what took your dad, my grandpa.
Correct.
And your grandmother and grandfather. So my great grandparents.
Correct.
Just the malnourished. They were old.
Oh.
But they were also asked to work.
My parents is not dying natural because they don't have enough food and no medicine and stress and die. And plus my dad, he is like don't have enough food, no medicine. He's sick and he's stressed because his son get murdered. He love and he care. He love the son. So he is like more sad and everything going on.
Yeah. All that into combine. So the
combined.
The paranoia, the secrecy that you couldn't let anyone know who you were related to.
Correct.
Being forced to work.
Correct.
Being malnourished, not being fed enough.
Right.
And you being young. Right. All of that in combination.
And also the child is separate from him and the child never happy, never healthy. So he think about the child and he think about food. He think about he's sick and then combining everything, he passed.
Yeah.
Yeah, he passed. So the experience of the bad life in Cambodia in Popot regime is like I am in hell. I'm not expect that I'm be alive. I'm not expect that I could survive because of every day you think about I'm going to be like this forever my whole life. I'm going to be stay here. I go the popo gonna stay forever in my life, or I'm going to die, or I'm gonna be survive. In 11 or 12 years old, Chai asked me think about every day like that, and hungry at night, and miss parent every night, cry every night, scare every night. The daytime miss parent, but the daytime is like light day, daylight, and you work, you have no mind to think about it. You have to think about how do you work for them.
Right.
Yeah. That is the that's why I'm saying I'm living in the hell.
That's hell. Yeah. That is hell. It's there's no words when I hear my mom speak these stories. Or even the stories that I hear from my aunt and uncle. There's just no words. It's just absolute. There's no words. And there's no words, but this happened. This happened to my mom. This happened to everyone who raised me. And this happened to everyone who didn't survive.
Yes.
Yeah.
We kept that sad for a very, very, very long time because we never forget it, but we never said it out. We never talk out.
It's impossible to forget, Ma.
We never forget, but we never talk because that is over. It is too much.
Too much painful.
Mm-hmm. Too much is like struggle or what? Yeah. And then we speak it out now because it's been a very long time since 1975 through 2022. It's more than almost 50 years. Yes.
Yeah,
50
years.
Almost 50 years. And every day we think about say, oh, if we keep sad, we keep secret. Then it's nothing earned. Mm-hmm. But when we getting older, the sad is more thinner, and we just want to forget it. If I don't say it out, I don't talk, that means it's nothing earned. So mm-hmm. just let it go. Just let it out.
Let it out so it doesn't it's not so heavy, because you won't be able to forget this map.
Never forget it.
But if, as you've gotten older and time has passed for about 47 years now, it's like a little bit easier for you to talk about it.
So correct.
But the pain will still be there.
Correct.
Because you lost.
Correct.
Your family members.
Oh, correct.
Mm-hmm. You came in at 11 years old when Popo came into regime.
Correct.
And then when Popo's regime was overthrown, the Khmer Khan was overthrown, you were 15 years old.
Yes.
Still really young, Ma.
Yes. Still a teen.
Yeah, still a teen. Still really young.
Correct.
You've gone through hell on earth. It seems like a nightmare that you lived through. In 1979, the Khmer Khan is no longer in power. And so now Cambodia is in a shift of who takes the political leader.
Yes.
But really, at that point, you are able to leave the work camps.
Yes.
Tell me about the next part of this at 1979.
I stay in a city for about a couple months, about maybe 3, 4, 5 months, something like that. And we're starving because we don't have food yet. We don't have any equipment, no equipment to raise our family, because after Popot, we don't have anything to build up yet, because everybody is empty hand.
Yeah, there was like no records of, of family ties.
Yes, because before Popo, we have house, we have a property. farm property, like equipment, everything. But by the time after Popo break out, we don't have any, we just only empty hand. And then we think about where we could go, how do we raise our family back together. And then someone say, okay, you know, they have like a refugee camp in Thailand border. If you could walk there, and then we all gather all the family, and then make appointment with the whole family, say, okay, now we have to walk from Battambang to Thailand border. And then we take like 3 months from Battambang to Thailand border, Cambodia border, Thailand. We walk a daytime when the sun set anywhere. We don't need any shelter. We just sleep on the road, on the jungle.
Yeah.
We sleep there. And then if we could find some food, cooking outside and eat. And after that, we walk by barefoot again. Even shoe, we don't have any shoe. We just walk barefoot.
Through the jungle.
The jungle. Through
to Countdown.
Yeah.
To the Thailand border.
Yeah. We walk on the street. By the time we have small, you know, we have a street to the border. Yeah, border. The street is not like a street in America. The street is just like the road, you know, the mud, the rock, the ground. And then we find a way, we got to a border. When we got to the border, the American embassy, all the embassy is support. Mm-hmm. Give us food, give us rice, give us vegetable, give us a turf to make a roof.
Mm-hmm. This is like the husk, right?
The husk, but the turf, you know, the turf, support pliang. The tarp
they gave my mom tarps.
Tarp.
So this tarp was really helpful, because before what they would use for their housing is like the corn husk.
Yeah.
But with these tarps, these were able to repel water, let alone create more shade. So life was a little bit better.
Better. Safety.
And it was more safe.
So we just live in the camp inside the fence.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in the fan, you safety.
And so Khao Dang is a refugee camp. It's one of the large, it's the largest refugee camp. It was actually the first refugee camp that was made after Bolpo's regime. So anyone who survived, they were making their way to Khao Dang refugee camp. This is where life was slowly beginning back, or whatever normalcy they can have after going through hell. This is also where you would see anyone who survived, or where you haven't seen them in a long time, being separated. This is where maybe families were reunited.
Whoever alive, if we is reunited.
Yes. If they were lucky to survive, and they made their way with luck, or even just the willpower to walk from where they were at to Kawadang, that's when maybe some members of their families are reconnected.
You were in Kawadang from 1979 to 1984. That's 5 years.
Correct.
So that's another 5 years of resettling your life back from Popot. Life gets a little bit better. You start learning a little bit of English because there's English school.
I go to school. I go to Cambodia school too. The teacher is teach Cambodia. I study over there during that time, during four or 5 years in camp. I increase of go to school, and I increase of learning English is a third language. It's very basic. So I only have a very basic English from there. But I'm be proud of myself. I say, okay, I'm going to work harder. At least I have my base language for myself. Right. Yeah.
And for my mom and her family who survived, they were granted citizenship to America, and they came in waves. So some of her older siblings, along with their families, she came to America with her mother and her sister, and her sister's
niece and nephew,
and her niece and nephew, and
in-law,
and her her brother-in-law. Matt, you told me a story about, and you traveled by plane.
By plane.
How was that? Your first time on a plane, going to America.
That is my first time on a plane. I be proud of myself. I say, okay, I'm going to have a better life. I'm going to be born again. But somehow I was pop up of missing my dad that I never felt before. Before I live in Kawidang refugee camp, I know I away from my father. I know my father passed away, but I know that I'm close to him. Somehow I have a feeling my tear is come down, and I said, I call my dad is old. I say, Khiem Lia Hai. Oh, goodbye. I'm gonna go far, far, far away from you. I know you passed, but because of Cambodia is our country, the place that we born, and the place that I bury you. And then I just whisper to myself. And also I'm scared of the plane. I never have, this is my first plane. I'm scared and I don't understand. Yes, everything is like mixing in my mind. First is happy, and then the sadness come out. I miss my dad every day, every night. I think about him every day. I know he's passed.
So on that, while you were sitting on the plane, you're essentially saying goodbye.
Goodbye, by whisper myself.
Yeah, goodbye to your dad.
Yeah, and I told him I'm gonna go far, far, far away. Yeah. I don't know where America is, but I know it's far.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know, but somehow it's like pop to let me know that it's too far.
Yeah.
Go too far.
And you went through experience that I don't think I will ever experience.
No, you're not.
You survived, and then you now have a new life in America.
Yeah, I have a new life, like I reborn.
Yeah. And you've said that before. I misheard her, and I thought she said that coming to America is like is like winning the lottery.
But no.
But now that I hear her stories more in depth, because now she's able to tell her stories, I heard wrong. Coming to America for my mom is better than winning the lottery.
It's a lot more better than win a lottery.
Yeah. So having her gone through a genocide at 11 years old, having seen death, having experienced death, untimely death of her brother,
unnatural death based on starvation, no medicine,
no shelter,
no justice,
no
just unfair treatment of humans, and the death of millions. Ma, coming to America was better than winning the lottery.
Yes, correct.
Because for you life is priceless.
Of course,
especially when so many people were killed, so many people were executed,
yeah,
for no reason, for no real fair justice reason.
No reason, just want to kill people.
Yeah. Matt, you say you're lucky, like you said, insulin kamae
samnang. Yeah, lucky. I'm a big lucky.
That you're really, samnang tom. So you were lucky to have survived Bopot.
Yeah, of course.
Have survived death.
Yes.
To be reborn, you're lucky.
Right.
To come to America, you're lucky.
Yes.
But Ma, I feel that it's not just luck. Isn't for me, when I hear your story as a daughter of someone who experienced this, Ma, I don't think it's just luck. I think it had to do with just the strength and the resilience to survive Bopot, to survive the labor, the forced labor at 11 years old, to see death everywhere, to see people drop dead because of overwork and exhaustion. I don't think it's just luck that you have. I think it's your strength, the sheer strength to keep going, to hide, to keep going as scared as you were at 11 years old.
Yes, you could say that, and I agree. But in Cambodia, in our culture, the lucky is the main word that cover everything. If you alive, you not die by that time, that regime, you say you're lying, that mean you lucky.
Yeah.
So the lucky is the main word. It is lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If you not save your life, you die. That means you're not lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In America, I agree, but we only have that, the main word.
Right.
Yeah. Only samnang is a lucky. Khmer tha samnang.
Yeah. And so my mom's story, which she let me know this is the lighter version, and it's so heavy to hear as stories, so I won't be able to imagine what it's like. But I hear these stories, they are as heavy as you hear them, they are as heartbreaking, they are as heartache, they are harrowing, they are, there's no word to explain.
Correct.
This feeling.
Right.
While I'm hearing you say it, because I see it more in your face.
Uh-huh.
Of what you went through.
Uh-huh.
My mom's story as Khmer, as Cambodian, as being Southeast Asian, her story is only a snapshot of only a glimpse of what happened in Cambodia's history. But moreover, the strength to survive, the sheer willpower to survive, Ma.
Yes.
And I think that is what really made you so strong to keep going, no matter how hard it is.
Yes.
To adapt in America.
Yes.
Because granted, coming to America was better than winning the lottery for you.
Correct.
However, you still had so many challenges by getting used to how life is in America, let alone this new world, because of this new life in America.
Right. New life, reborn again, and a new world for me.
Yeah.
Yes. But anyway, I'm learning.
Yeah.
You had
You had a learning curve. You had a learning curve with the language barrier, with trauma from your past life.
Correct.
You know, you're figuring out just American life, American food.
Yeah. But I'm still carry on.
Yeah. So Matt, I thank you.
You're welcome.
For surviving.
I thank you myself for surviving from the held to here too. Yeah. Yeah. That's the lucky that I have. That's what Cambodia say, Samnang.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Samnang is lucky.
My mom's story is important, and her experiences of surviving a genocide and coming from nothing relates to the bigger picture of being a Southeast Asian minority in America. Southeast Asian and ethnic communities alike need resources that will help them live after going through the horrors of war. Many live in low-income communities that lack resources while they experience PTSD, language barriers, racial discrimination, minority health disparities, and substance abuse. And so we honor them for what they went through by giving them credit for surviving and servicing them. And ADAP offers resources including prevention education, individual and family counseling, treatment services, job skill and employment opportunities, as our motto and philosophy remains that people need people.
Thank you for joining us for today's special episode. Please join us Wednesday at Prevention 365 Podcasts on Bleav, Spotify, and ADAP. Thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you for all.